B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon. Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The free kick by Bailey to be returned by Raymond. Stutter step. Trying to work his way upfield. And there is Chase Winovich downfield, breaking down on special teams.
Great hang time right there by Bailey.
That kick was insane.
I mean, it's just right off the foot, man. It's like being down at NASA.
Very strong.
There's the fifth round pick out of Stanford. Jake Bailey pushing Ryan Allen for the punter's job.
Normally, I would mock that hyperbole, Maz, NASA. But I'm with him. This guy's a freaking bomber.
Zoe's comparing this guy to the Apollo 13 mission. Holy crap, NASA. Yeah, he practices at Cape Canaveral, Zoe. That's what he does.
No. But this Bailey kid? I mean, I'm sorry. I know this sounds so corny because we mocked Bill for saying this stuff. But he's like a weapon.
You know what? I admit, I've been watching him. I watched him in the first game because he was kicking off. I wanted to see how the kickoffs looked.
And the camera coverage was so bad on that. They didn't follow the ball up into the, you know, sky. They just sort of, so the ball disappeared and it's like, where did it go? It was up there for so freaking long.
He wouldn't be able to kick in Dallas with that big screen there. He'd hit it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
67 yards in the air. And again, Maz, he took like a half step or something.
I mean, he barely strode, you know, when he kicked the thing. I mean, when he kicked it, I went, whoa. Like, and then the thing just kept going, and it was up there for 5.5 seconds. I think Zoe said he timed it at 5.1. I've heard that it was actually 5.3. 5.5 seconds in the air, and it went 70 yards almost.
I mean, bananas.
It was. It was an absolute freaking missile.
So when the news came just after we got off the air yesterday that Ryan Allen had been released, to me, it was the least surprising thing that I've heard.
No question.
It's like, I feel bad for Allen. He was good here. He had a great Super Bowl, but this other kid... And you know the Pats were serious about it when you trade up in the fifth round for the punter. And we said at the time, like, you know, I didn't say anything because I'm so used to them doing cockamamie things like this at the draft, like it barely registers. Do punter talk on your own time. But obviously they were onto something, man. They were onto something. It's the first guy who kicks with his right foot in forever. I can't tell you. From Lee Johnson to Ken Walter to my guy Josh Miller. He's such my guy. I forgot his name. Josh Miller.
Mesko was a lefty, wasn't he?
He might have been. I can't remember. So Bill's always been about the lefty, just to give that returner a different look. They're not used to seeing the ball come off the left foot and the spin and all that. Bill thinks it gives him just that extra hair advantage. So for him to, you know, pretty much scrap the left-footed kicker thing, punter thing, and not only do that, but to trade up in the fifth round to go get the guy tells you. And I mean, this is to their credit because there was some scout who said, Bill, I know this is a punter, and I know you like left-footed guys, but you've got to watch this guy. You've got to see this guy. He's a freak. And you know that's how it went down, because as much as Bill's on top of everything, he's not watching the Stanford punt team on a regular basis. So it's whoever that area scout is says to Bill, you've got to watch this guy. I mean, seriously. And then Bill watches it, and he's like, you've got to be kidding me. This guy's got a howitzer.
You don't get to twist his arm. He lusts for Johnny Hecker.
He really does.
Name. Yeah, he won't shut up about him for 5 straight minutes. So I'm sure it wasn't, you know, that much in terms of getting Belichick's eyes on the kid.
So to me, why did they cut Ryan Allen now? To me, it's simple. They're doing him a favor.
Yeah.
They're doing him a solid. You still have a chance to go get a job. He should be able to get a job easy. A good punter, Ryan Allen.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do it now when teams are still looking for punters and you give him a chance to land on his feet. You do it for him. And I would like to think they did it for him. To go get a job, because he did nothing wrong here. And so that's why they do it now, because the writing's on the wall. It's like, I'm sorry, man. You can't do what this guy does. And we'll see if he can do it consistently, but woof. Wow.
And apparently, though, from everyone that's been at practice, he's been kicking it like that all camp. I mean, it's not. So when you say, can he do it consistently? I think he can. I mean, I know games are different. He's kicking the freaking stuffing out of the thing.
But it also speaks to me about a bigger point of the team. And how Bill's building it and what we're headed towards. And what the transition was last year, and that is defense, running the ball, field position.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of team he's turning you into. And that's where the punter plays. That's where the punter plays.
I mean, we touched on this, Murray, one day when he was in here.
Weeks ago, yeah.
Remember? That, like, why would you draft a punter unless you thought you would need it, right? I don't think it's all about the money because Allen wasn't all that expensive anyway.
To me, Allen was fine. Allen did what they needed them to do. I think this was purely about Bill watching this guy and saying, holy geez, this is the next Johnny Hecker. What's Hecker's first name?
Yeah, Johnny Hecker.
Whatever, this is the next guy. And so I think if this Bailey didn't come around, they just keep Ryan Allen because he's, for the most part, does what they need to do.
Yeah, he was great in the Super Bowl. But you know what? Overall, their coverage team sucked last year.
Did they?
Both of them. Again, I was looking. I looked this up a couple of weeks ago, and I looked it up now just a couple minutes ago. Their net punt coverage last year, 19th. Their kickoff coverage, 26th. Their touchback percentage on kickoffs, 25th. Now, some of that was by design, maybe. Their punts inside the 20, 23rd. Right? And again, you know, they had a good offense still. Right, so it's not like they were punting from their own 10-yard line the whole time. Like now it got a lot better late, particularly in the Super Bowl with the punting. But remember last year how often we talked about how bad their coverage was?
Yeah.
They went out and got special teams coverage guys. They got Terrence Brooks and Brandon Bolden. They brought those guys back.
Defense, field position, running the ball.
They're playing that way again. They are. They're going back to that, which tells you that Bill is safeguarding against the deterioration of the quarterback. And so when I say deterioration, you know, from if you go from super high to a little lower, that's still deterioration, but you're playing at a high level. He's just not going to let the season ride on the shoulders of a 42-year-old quarterback. He's not going to do it.
Let me tell you, it worked-ish last year. I think last year was a transition. I mean, Brady's still, you know, still a passing team a lot of weeks. I don't think Belichick needs to be this dramatic with it, though. I don't. I mean, I think Brady's fallen off a little bit in the last year plus, just a little. But if you surrounded him with high-end talent and an offensive line, I still think he'd shred and you could win throwing the ball 45 times a game. I still think you could do that. So I think it's not just Bill doing it because he fears where Brady's headed. I think Bill's doing it because he wants to do it this way, because he doesn't need to. I'm sorry. If you surrounded Brady with the proper weapons, he'd still be top two, top three. And I'm talking statistically. You know, not just with your eyeballs on a 3rd and 10 in the AFC Championship game. I'm telling you, you could still win that old way, the passing way, if you surrounded Brady. But I think Bill, for whatever reason, maybe just getting out ahead of the curve, or just purely, I'm going to do it my way now. Something like that.
Well, you
know.
Mean since he lost Jimmy G, this is sort of the
I don't know. I'm just telling you, I don't think
backlash from the Palace queue.
I think Brady is way ahead of where John Elway was at the end of his career. And I think Brady is way ahead of where Peyton Manning was at the end of his career. So, but Belichick's giving him the Peyton Manning, John Elway treatment at the very end. Like, we have to, you know, you're just a sidecar. And I think that's an overreact. Now, they can still win that way. And maybe Bill will win that way. He probably will. So I'm not telling you it's not going to work. I'm just telling you it's a little bit of an overreaction.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Of course you don't.
I don't mind it.
Of course you don't.
And I'll tell you what I think the other factor is. It's not just about Brady's play. Because, again, last year, Brady overall, you know, by the numbers, he was average. But I don't think he slipped a whole lot. I mean, he slipped a little bit. And if he had better players around him, the numbers probably would have been better. But at 42, can he make it through 19 games if he's thrown it 50 times a week?
I think he can.
So I question it. I do, again. I mean, I don't know if he can.
I mean, 50 is an exaggeration, but...
No, but I'm saying ish.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, no. I still think you could have a conventionally modern, high-profile, prolific passing game where it's, you know...
35, 40 attempts.
Okay. Like, yeah, I was going to say, you know, a pass-run ratio of 70-30 or 65-35. I think you could do that with Brady. He'd get through and you'd win championships if you surrounded him with the right personnel. So I don't think you need to treat Brady the way they treated Elway at the end and Peyton Manning at the end, but Bill's kind of doing that.
Yeah, I think it's a smart way to go. I do. I think it's the right thing to do. That, you know,
The thing is, I think it'll work both ways because I think the league is so down and, you know, for all these other factors that Bill could probably do it both ways. I just don't think it's needed.
If Brady's still what he has been or close to it for the majority of his career or in the last 5 years, call it whatever, then he'll be good enough. He'll be good enough to get by with Edelman and Myers and I keep wanting to say, is it Jacoby Myers?
Yeah, Jacoby Myers.
Okay. Yeah,
for some reason it doesn't feel
no,
right.
No, I know.
So my, you know, like he'll get by with those guys and Demaryius Thomas and Josh Gordon. He'll get by. He will. If Brady's done it before, if he's still the same guy, he'll get by with those guys again.
Okay, we will continue with your thoughts. We're loaded, I promise, right to your phones after these words. We also have a developing thought on the Josh Gordon situation and why Bill is taking the public approach with him that he's taking. We'll get to that coming up.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Matt.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go, on the Sports Hub app.
To your calls, man, you've been waiting patiently. Mike and Peabody, happened to catch the ball game last night? How'd you feel about Jimmy G?
Oh, no, I wasn't calling about the ball game. I was calling about if Garoppolo sucks, for whatever reason, if he sucks as bad as, you know, you guys may think he does, did Bill get good value with a second-round pick in the trade?
No, because he had a better offer on the table, and he never picked up the phone.
So, well, right, it's about what the value was at that time.
Well, right, it's really just about what someone else was willing to offer him. So for whatever reason, he didn't want to send him to Cleveland. But Cleveland was sitting there ready to give you a first-round pick, and Bill did not pick up the phone. So that makes that trade a loss. It does. He did not maximize the value there by a long shot. And not that anyone could have predicted it at the time, because the pick that Cleveland was offering you was the Houston first-round pick that they had gotten in the Deshaun Watson trade, right?
Correct.
That allowed them to move up for Deshaun Watson. That turned into the fourth overall pick. So you could have ended up with the fourth overall pick for Garoppolo, but Bill did not want to send him to Cleveland. And so that's the second guess. At the end of the day, if that offer wasn't there and you just got a second round pick and Garoppolo turns into a dud, then yeah, you'd say you did well with that, but there was something better there sitting for you.
Oh yeah, and the ramifications of that too. Like, you didn't send him to Cleveland, and then you tried to get Mayfield, but Cleveland had needed a quarterback because they didn't have Garoppolo, and they took Mayfield. Like, the ripple effect of that decision is huge.
We've got Jared in Westwood. What's your Patriots thought?
Hey, I wanted to talk about the linebacking core. Welcome back, Matt. So I know you guys were pretty low on Van Noy when he first came over, and we know about Hightower's injury history, and we're all probably sick of the Cassius Marshes and Landon Roberts and Marquise Flowers of the world, but I'm wondering what you guys think about the linebacking core this year, and I think Bentley's got to have a huge year.
Okay, Maz, you're big on the linebackers, aren't you?
I do. I like the linebacking core now, and again, you know, Bentley to me looks like his timing is just a little off. But he also had trouble bringing down Deion Lewis, who one-on-one is like an impossible tackle anyway.
Oh, did he undress him on that catch and run?
Couple of times.
That was the one behind where Deion Lewis caught it behind him and then juked him. That was tremendous.
Yeah, and there was a play where Bentley got into the backfield too and missed the guy, right? So I think it was Lewis. He was just a little off. But again, I liked the player last year. Hard not to like him. And then you add on, I'm not a Roberts guy, but I like the fact that that Collins is back. You know, Hightower, if you count him in there, and he can move around. I like this kid who was on the practice squad last year, this Munson, 48. He looks to me like he's half decent. So, like, to me, they have so much more to pick from there. And if
can you
count
Winovich?
I was just going to say, and if you count Winovich and the guys on the, you know, on the defensive end position, there's a whole bunch of bodies there. Like, to me, all, up and down the defense, I love the numbers. I love the numbers. Now, again, does every guy going to pan out? I don't know, but it feels to me like they got a lot of depth there that they should be able to land on something pretty good.
They're so deep, I would wish they'd try to trade one of these guys for a tight end. Bedard mentioned it in the post game we did with Beadle. Cameron Brate, the tight end in Tampa, like, they're really deep at that position, and O.J. Howard is, you know, obviously going to win the job. If you can trade for him, move someone like a Landon Roberts, maybe with like a later pick or something like that.
I would do that.
617-779-0985. Larry on the Cape on our Chris Sale conversation. Yes, Larry.
Yeah, thanks. I was wondering, the signing didn't make any sense, I agree. But is it a calculation about the cost of the insurance that it's really worth it if he breaks down? They just have to pay the premiums. Is that possibly why they do these crazy things? Like, that it's really only $10 million?
Okay, so I'll drop you, Larry. I mean, they're protected from a real cash standpoint, I guess, but that still held against your luxury tax and your, you know, effective cap, if you will. There is a effective salary cap for a team like the Red Sox. And so it still prevents you from signing other players. So for our purposes, I don't care about John Henry's insurance settlement.
Yeah, me neither. I couldn't give a rat's ass,
frankly. About his payroll and not being able to add quality players because they're up against some sort of luxury tax.
Yeah, the bottom line is that sales going to count $25 million against their payroll next year, and that's going to hamstring them on some level. So, I, like, to me, I'm sorry, you don't give them that contract saying, oh, okay, well, then if he gets hurt, you know, we get the money back. Like, no, because you still lose some of the flexibility. You have a lot invested in that guy to be the centerpiece of your staff.
We've got Howard in Burlington on the Pats. Hi, Howard.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Good. And welcome back, Maz. Mike, just 30 seconds. So about Garoppolo, I never liked him, and I think he's more of a systems guy, and I like Stidham more of a – he can create things. But last night's game, the thing I hated the most was Joe Flacco. I hate that guy and his cadence. Always sounds like he's trying to go to the bathroom, and that's what I'm – that just makes me irritated. And, Maz, this is what happened with Bailey for the punter's job. Somebody was down at NASA, and they called up Bill and went, Bill, there's this guy down there at NASA.
Okay, Howard, you're going to have to get your own show. You can workshop your material there. The what was I going to say about
Flacco, Garoppolo?
Flacco and the Broncos. So we did this exercise last week, Maz, because we spent one day just dumping all over the AFC. Like, everybody, it's one clown show after the next. Antonio Bryant won't get on the field because his feet are circumcised.
Brown.
And his Antonio Brown, right? I'm sorry. Antonio Brown says circumcised feet and won't wear the helmet. And Andrew Luck has a bone growing out of his leg now. He's got the mo bone going. So we're just ripping on every team in the AFC. Like, it's all a bunch of clowns. It's one calamity after the next. It's one big injury after the next. Like, it's, again, just, you know, march of the tomato cans for the Patriots. And so next day I said, you know what? Now we have to have an exercise. I'm going to make you pick a team that you don't think's going to do anything, but will emerge. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, Jacksonville emerged as a good team, and no one would have picked that. So outside of Kansas City, who we would all have as a second team in the AFC, you have to pick a team from the pack to emerge that we wouldn't expect. I picked the Jets, you know, just, and that felt good. And I think there's some merit to it. Good young defense, good young quarterback, maybe a coach that can get something out of that quarterback, etc. Marshall Hook picked the Broncos. And I wonder about that Broncos team. When you watch that Chubb guy.
Well, after seeing some of the highlights from last night, I would fear Denver a little bit.
I would just say, I mean, they're going to win some games on defense before it even gets to Flacco. And if they're going to do that same thing that I was talking about with the Patriots, where they're going to run the ball with Lindsey, and they're going to run the ball, and Flacco's not going to turn it over. And they're going to win their home games because Denver's hard to play in, and they're going to win on defense because they got two guys who are just absolute game wreckers. And now you have home games in the playoffs. It's like, there's this, I don't know if there's a path there for Denver or not. There might be.
Oh, I wouldn't rule Denver out. Again, after seeing what I saw last, you know, and again, I saw highlights. I say last night. But if you put that guy opposite Von Miller, that's a nightmare. That is a nightmare. That's like Miller and DeMarcus Ware all over again, but maybe even better.
Yeah.
For crying out loud. It's the same type of thing. It would scare the crap out of you if you're an opposing team. I don't know if they're quite as strong in the secondary as they were back then, but the two of them, you watch it. It's the first thing that popped into my head when I saw him. He said, is Miller still there? They still got Miller too, right?
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah. Of course, yes.
No. I mean, but that's the thought I had watching it. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, who's going to handle those guys? So Denver's a pretty good one.
So they can win games 13-3, but the Patriots can't.
Well, who said the Patriots can't win 13-3?
You did.
What do you mean? When did I say that?
I don't see that as a sustainable way to build if it's going to be defense and running and trying to run the ball. You've said that the Patriots can't win these kind of close games. You're going to just like weigh on your defense.
I would not choose to win that way if I had Tom Brady. So back to the previous segment. I would not choose to win that way on Tom Brady. And I don't think Denver's going to win a Super Bowl. But we sort of said, who's that Jacksonville equivalent, that team to come out of the pack? We never said Super Bowl team, did we? So if I had Joe Flacco, I'd try and win some games 13-3. Yeah, I would.
I wouldn't rule out Jacksonville being that team again.
So I was going to ask you, that was Murray's pick.
I wouldn't rule out Jacksonville again. I mean, I don't know if you count the Ravens. Like, allegedly, Lamar Jackson's having a better camp, right? Like, I don't know if I believe that.
That's a team that I'm trying to win 13-3. This is sort of my point.
But Jacksonville, if Foles can just manage the game and, you know, pick up first downs and be better than Bortles, which isn't a high ceiling. Like, if he can be that, they could be pretty good. I mean, I wouldn't rule out Jacksonville. You know, again, that division, too, is a little arbitrary based on the quarterback plays inconsistent. If Luck is hurt, I could totally see Jacksonville coming out of there.
I just think they're a stretch. Denver's a stretch. Baltimore's a stretch for reasons, you know, for these reasons. You can't win 13-3 at a high level. You can't win with Lamar Jackson. Joe Flacco, good luck. Nick Foles, really? And what's he surrounded by down there? Have you seen that receiver group down there or their skill group down there?
The receivers aren't that great.
Their best skill players a freaking fat-ass running back. I say that with love and respect in my heart, but please, how far are you going with that? They can play defense, but then again, their best defensive player is this close to leaving, you know, going off the reservation at any moment in time. So I think other than Kansas City, every team's a stretch, which was part of the exercise.
No question. I mean, the conference is weak. Nobody picked Kansas City. I mean, nobody picked Cincinnati, did they?
No. No one picked Cincinnati.
The Bengals are going to blow. Oh, my God, are they going to blow.
Woody and Lowell, what do you got, Woody?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Hey, I think more than Belichick protecting Brady, I think he's just adapting to the defensive trends in the NFL. They, the six defensive backs, 225-pound linebackers. So when last year they did a lot of running out of passing formations, and I think he's just trying to get ahead of the curve,
Well, Woody, then how do you explain them drafting two running backs high in the last two drafts? How do you explain them having four, five guys on their roster at the running back position? How do you explain the punter thing? So it's not just how he's drafting on defense or building on defense, but he's sort of building around that whole thing. And again, I think it's a little bit of an overreaction, a little bit. Now they won that way. They won the Super Bowl that way last year. Can they go the whole season like that? I just don't think they need to with Brady.
Yeah, I don't look at it the way you do. I think he's mitigating is what he's doing. So if and when the passing game isn't what they're accustomed to it being, that they can go in another direction, and they're built that way. And so again, whether it's running the ball, defending, like all of it, kicking game, all the above, I think he's just mitigating. I think that's what he's doing.
Gary in the car, quickly.
Hey, just wanted to touch on what you guys were just talking about. So do you think the way Bill's structuring the team as far as the running backs goes, the defense and all that, is kind of a slight to Brady? Do you think he'd be offended by that? You've surrounded me with, crap receivers. I mean, the only guy you really got is Edelman. And then you're telling me that I got to run the ball however many times. And you know what I mean? And it's like, you just said it. You could win with Flacco that way, but if you're Tom Brady, you're like, what the hell am I? I'm one of the greatest, if not the greatest. You're going to sit here and compare me to Flacco?
Gary, and I'm going to cut you off because the answer is yes. Do I think he's agitated by that? Yes. Not that I think Brady wants to win, so I don't want to act like he's Dan Marino at the end, who I think really cared more about throwing the ball than winning. And I'm not saying Brady's that, but I think he's in a contract year for the first time. How he plays and the numbers he puts up is going to impact what he makes. And I think we saw this year, he cares what he makes. And I think he's agitated by the whole thing. It's like, you think I'm Peyton Manning at the end? You think I'm that done? And we're going to, either give me no receivers or just projects and load up on running backs and defense and the punter. And that's how we're going to win. Cause now I'm Joe Flacco. I think he feels that way a little bit. Yep, I do.
I mean, maybe this is part of the reason why he didn't want them to have the franchise tag or the transition tag. Said, so wait a minute, you're going to build the team in a different way now? You're going to de-emphasize me and you're going to cut my salary as we go? And then, franchise me and make me renegotiate?
Well, yes. I mean, look, him negotiating the franchise tag out is a tell that he wants the option for freedom, at the very least. So that tells you something. And if he wants the option for freedom, then wouldn't he want to be in the best position possible? And that would be having another MVP caliber season. But if we're punting and playing defense and handing the ball off, what kind of MVP season are you going to be looking at? I think that all sort of ties in. Here's Murray's update. There was, again, a development today at Patriots camp that should be good news for Tom Brady. You'll hear the latest there with Big Jim Murray. And when we come back, a developing opinion on how Belichick is handling the Josh Gordon situation.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, joining me now is Patriot head coach Bill Belichick. Before I even want to talk about the first half, I do want to bring up Josh Gordon, because you put out a statement earlier today. Anything you'd like to add to that?
Nope.
Not at all?
No, that's why I put out the statement.
Okay, all right. Good luck in the second half.
How would you describe, did he come in good shape, or are you pleased with how he maintains
that? Yeah, I think I've already covered all of it.
Bill, did you get a copy of the statement?
I saw it on Twitter, but it's been a couple.
Sorry, I don't do my face, but I mean, we're happy to give you a copy of it. It's really, that's where I'm at.
So I had one question about the statement, because it did feel like there was maybe a little bit of room there in terms of his future with the team, maybe some uncertainty. So if he's available according to the league, is there any uncertainty as far as you're concerned as to whether or not he'll be with the team?
Well, he hasn't even been on the field yet. I think I covered it. There's nothing more to add. It's another line of questioning, or are we going to... Or can a witness step down now?
Just curious.
I spent some time on this yesterday. Bill Belichick's handling of the Josh Gordon questions since his reinstatement over the weekend. And Maz's triumphant return today. We had a couple different theories. One is just Bill being Bill, because it just, if he has a chance to hock a loogie on the media, that's what he's going to do. That's, the first thing. I think there is another thing at play where, and again, we're just guessing, why is he, he's usually like this, so it's really that first thing. It's just him being him. But I think, other reasons to do it, I thought, would be trying to stop the hype train. He's just got here. It's his first day.
Sure.
I'm not going to give you any material to put into your story on TV or in the newspaper because I don't want this getting out of control. He's here one day at a time, especially for this guy, like you read about. So I'm not giving you anything on it. I'm not going to help you do your story to hype up Josh Gordon. He just got here. That's another reason to do it. Another reason to do it is I don't think they've allowed to have contact with him over this time. He couldn't practice at the facility. And I guess he could obviously have contact with Brady and teammates, but
he was at TB12.
Was Belichick, and obviously,
being Josh Gordon, was at TB12 working out with Brady.
Okay, got it. Right. He can cavort with players, but I don't think he's allowed to be in the team facility or talk or work with Bill or those sorts of things. So if Bill comes out and says, yeah, he's great, we look forward to having him, make it sound like they've been working with him, well, that's a violation, and so maybe Bill wants to distance himself from that. That's just a guess. Again, did he have to be such a prick to Burton? Did he have to be so ornery? And again, he was smiling for some of it yesterday, but did he have to be so standoffish? So is there other reasons at play? And I'll tell you what, Chris Gasper came up with a good one. Chris Gasper in today's Globe came up with a good one. So, this is his developing opinion, and I want to add it to the list. And I just think it's worth considering that Josh Gordon is such an anti-patriot in so many ways. As Gasper writes, Patriots coach Bill Belichick has a credo. Dependability is more important than ability. And everything about Gordon's career flies in the face of that Belichick point. He actually wrote bon mot, which is like, why do you do that, Chris? Flies in the face of that Belichick theory, that Belichick, give me, what does bon mot mean?
A witty remark.
Yeah, good word, yeah. Bon mot.
Flies in the face, but that's not what that is. It's a philosophy. It's his philosophy. The signing of Gordon flies in the face of Belichick's guiding philosophy, which is dependability is more important than ability. Because this is one of the most undependable guys in the history of pro sports. What's so funny?
Bon mot.
So ridiculous.
You're mad about learning.
No, I'm mad about him putting French into my sports column.
Yeah, it's a little much. I agree.
I mean, please. What are we doing? Doris Kearns Gasper.
They probably shop at the same stores.
No question.
He likes his French phrases. He likes his French clothing.
They buy their seeds at the same place in Cambridge.
Yeah, he's sitting down to have a little escargot right now.
Oh, feh.
Some frog's legs.
So anyway, here's what Gasper writes. Perhaps that's why Belichick has been stiff-arming questions about Gordon by maintaining it's a league matter. If Gordon succeeds, Belichick will embrace the credit. But if he relapses, he wants to distance himself from the Gordon signing. He wants to distance himself from the fallout because Gordon's mere presence in Foxborough flies in the face of a core Patriots philosophy. He wrote precept philosophy. Belichick isn't the only one contradicting himself when it comes to Gordon. The player's tremendous talent, intelligence, and engaging personality have a way of fostering justifications. But so what he's saying is Belichick's doing this. So when it blows up and Gordon misses his next test or falls off the wagon again, Belichick can say, listen, fellas, that was a league matter. We brought him back one day at a time. I never said a word about the guy. If you ask me, I didn't even really know about him. But if it works, yeah, we were working with him. We practiced that on Friday, and, we thought it might work. And so he gives himself, from the PR game, a good little way to play both sides of it, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like, you know, releasing the practice video after the Rams, the Seattle Super Bowl, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah, we practiced that on Friday.
Yeah, we were working on it on Friday, exactly. I mean, look, with Bill, I rule out nothing. I mean, again, it's be totally consistent with him. And again, that old Patriot philosophy of, you know, how can someone who says that dependability is more important than ability bring in a guy like this, who's the most undependable guy in the league?
Mass, I love saying this. I say it all the time because it's factually accurate. One of the most undependable players in the history of professional sports. I mean, literally, this is the fifth time he's come back from suspension. Name another player who's done that. Five? Steve Howard, like nine. So, I mean, he's on that list.
Oh, yeah. No, he's up there.
So this is why, you know, ultimately, I'm not going to root against the guy because I'm not like that dark of a person. I'm going to root against the guy.
You just can't be shocked if it is another suspension for him is all.
And I'm with Bill on this, especially at that receiver position. There's so much jackassery at that position that can I just get a guy who gets open, catches the ball, keeps his mouth shut, and just plays within the offense when you've got a great quarterback and great coaching and just kind of get that thing? Instead, they've got Josh Gordon and Demaryius Thomas. And Demaryius Thomas isn't as undependable as Gordon, but he's not a competitor. He's not dependable in terms of his compete level because he'll shut it down like you read about it. I mean, you shut him down every time you played him. Hit him in the mouth. Bye-bye, Demaryius.
I was going to say, he's also not all that dependable in terms of catching the ball.
Okay, so now you've got that guy and this guy. Off the field for the off-field thing, one of the most undependable pro athletes in the history of sports. And on the other side, a guy who I guess mostly stays on the field but will not compete if you ramp up the pressure on him. And those are the guys you're going to war with? Oh, I hate that receiving core. I do. And I'm not telling you it ain't going to work or that they're not going to win. I'm just telling you, aesthetically, I hate those kind of guys. No use for them. Never had any use for them. Never for one day had any use for Demaryius Thomas or Josh Gordon. And neither did you, folks, by the way. Neither did you. But now it's, you know, here we go. This is the receiving core.
I mean, I was surprised when he got reinstated. When I saw that, I was surprised. I know, Murray, you made this point, too. And it's like, because, again, I didn't see it coming. The way they had distanced themselves from him, and Brady in particular, like, you know.
He was talking about him in past tense.
So, hold on. So, I know you have a Gordon take as well. Let's pick that up on the other side. And speaking of jackassery at the receiver position, I do have a developing take on Antonio Brown as well and the helmet fiasco. So, to all of us with your calls, I promise, right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You all know that AB is not here today, right? So here's the bottom line. He's upset about the helmet issue. We have supported that. We appreciate that. Okay, but at this point, we've pretty much exhausted all avenues of relief. So from our perspective, it's time for him to be all in or all out. Okay? So we're hoping he's back soon. We got 89 guys busting their tails. We are really excited about where this franchise is going, and we hope AB is going to be a big part of it starting week one against Denver. End of story. No question.
So there's Mike Mayock's ultimatum the other day. I'm going to say it worked. Antonio Brown's back at practice wearing the new helmet today.
That is correct. Adam Schefter had it just about half hour ago.
Okay, so they've gotten him back in there. We'll see if he stays this time. Before I go back to the Gordon thing, I just want to get this off my chest. Because I do have a development in the Antonio Brown thing. And it's this. Would you let him wear his old freaking helmet, for crying out loud? Like, and this is like, I have like a bigger rant about this whole thing that spills into like seatbelts and helmets for motorcyclists and helmets for hockey players and all of this. It's like, if the guy wants to risk his own health and it doesn't impair anybody else or that's not even the right word. It doesn't endanger anyone else. What does it matter? Make him sign a waiver that indemnifies the league against a future lawsuit or the helmet maker for a future lawsuit or the Raiders for a future lawsuit for head injuries, and let him play with the Fakakta helmet. If some jackass wants to climb on a motorcycle without a helmet and endanger himself and no one else is in danger, let him ride without the helmet. And if he busts his head up in a motorcycle accident, then make sure that he can't sue the motorcycle maker, the road crew, the whatever. And it's like, Well, I don't get it. If some hockey player wants to play without a helmet and it's not endangering anyone, you make the meathead sign a waiver. I can't sue the team. I can't sue the league. I can't sue the ice maker. I can't sue the board maker. I can't sue the other team. I can't sue the stick maker. I can't sue the puck maker. And let me play. I don't get it. If some you don't want to wear a seatbelt, sign a waiver. You can't sue the car company. You can't sue the person who hit you. You can't sue the sign maker, the road maker, blah, blah, blah. You can't sue anyone if you get a head injury if you refuse to wear a helmet. Why can't we just carry on like that? I don't get it.
No, maybe they could. Look, again, my guess, I'm just, you know, again.
Let the guy wear the stupid helmet. If he wants to wear the stupid helmet, let him wear the stupid helmet. Make him sign something that says he can't sue anyone, and let's just get on with it.
Yeah. So my guess is that the league looks at it and says, well, then if he does it, then Brady's going to do
then
it.
Let him.
Exactly.
Let him.
And that you're applying common sense to this.
Come up with a contract. But if you guys wear that helmet, you can't sue anybody. Period. Sign. Let's go.
They just don't want to deal with the open can of worms. If Antonio Brown could wear a helmet, well, why can't I wear these sneakers? Or why can't I wear these knee pads that aren't approved? Then it's just going to be a whole thing.
Just have a standard contract. You don't wear the standard uniform. You can't sue anybody. So if you want to wear the stupid knee pads, sign. Here it is. Boilerplate. Here's the contract. And same with the guy on the motorcycle that doesn't want to wear the helmet and the guy that doesn't want to wear the seatbelt and the hockey player that doesn't want to wear the helmet. There's a million examples. I mean, can someone who smokes a cigarette anymore sue anybody? Are you allowed to sue anybody at this time if you start smoking right now?
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine that you
it's over.
Then again, Let's see where the vape thing goes in about 15 years. But
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like this is like a sort of a bigger thing.
Sure.
But it all applies. I understand if what you're doing.
I mean, you sign a waiver when you go skydiving, don't you?
I right. Precisely. So just sign up, give that waiver to this knucklehead who wants to wear a stupid helmet.
But yeah, if you are willingly incurring risks, then you should be able to do it.
But period.
Everything that they've said about, you know, head trauma and CT and how they supposedly care about it at this point, they would be contradicting themselves if they then had.
Why? It's up to him. It's now his personal choice.
I understand that. That's common sense. But you know that the world at large would be out of their minds if the NFL then went back on that.
Well, this is why everybody sucks.
Exactly. Yes.
It's just common sense.
I thought you cared about head trauma and the players. They don't. Just, again, apply common sense.
No.
Of course they don't.
But if he doesn't care about his own head, what do I care about his head? That's up to you. That's your head. You want to stick it, you know.
Well, but you have to protect people from themselves.
No, I don't.
No. Don't you understand?
Nope. Life is way, way, way too short for me to try and protect you from yourself. If you are going to put yourself in danger, go nuts. Please, I'm not wasting a second of my time on your risky behavior because I got enough crap going on in my own life. So you go do it. Like, no, I do not have so maybe that's the core of it. No, I do not have to protect you from yourself. You are responsible for you. And if you want to wear some stupid leather helmet from the 30s, go nuts. What do I care? Just then put a paper in front of them, sign it. You can't sue anybody. And can we just get on with it? Like, that's what's sort of driving me nuts about the whole thing. I mean, obviously, Antonio Brown is a first class asswipe. I mean, there's just no question about it. This guy is nuts, and I got no use for. I'm not trying to defend Antonio Brown. I'm just
He's gone to another level now.
Oh my God! This whole back and forth. Let him wear the freaking thing already, and put him a paper in front. He can't sue anybody. Now, doesn't that solve everything? Like, well, I don't understand why this is so hard.
I mean, I can't remember a case, and I'm sure there are millions of them, and I'm just not thinking hard enough. Where a guy blasts his way out of town like he did in Pittsburgh. And then blasts his way out of the next place almost before he even gets there.
I'm convinced it's a smokescreen. I mean, he is a mental case, but as typically the case in these types of situations, when you're in your own head, like Antonio Brown apparently is all the time, you're either too embarrassed or afraid of being vulnerable, admitting you screwed up by freezing your own feet by going into a cryo chamber in France. So I think he's more hurt than he's letting on. So he doubles down with his stupidity, thus the helmet nonsense. I think he's more hurt than he's let on. His feet are still a problem. I'm convinced of this.
Whatever the case. On that.
You had a little trouble with the cryo chamber, the pronunciation of it, I heard.
Cairo.
So how did this come back to you, of all things?
Oh, no, I heard it.
We have an app, you see. It's got to reach 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, I was on the road. I spent a little time in the car. I clicked it on.
No, good for you.
I said, there you go.
I do that, too. I listen to the show. I'm out here all the time. But I mean, it just sort of drives me nuts. If the guy, why do we have to protect you from yourself? Why does the league have to protect you from yourself? all know the dangers of head trauma. We all know if you are going to not wear a seatbelt, not wear a helmet on your motorcycle, not wear the right helmet on a football field, not wear a helmet on the hockey sheet, then you are responsible for your own noggin, and you can't sue anybody. And just sign it, and let's go. Go ahead. Go nuts. Smoke that cigarette. That's your deal, buddy. I'm not trying to save you from you at all. One bit. Light them up. Smoke them if you got them. Not my problem. Can we just get on with it instead of just going around in this circle? Like, okay, we'll wear this helmet. Can I wear this helmet? Can I wear that helmet? No. Well, it's not approval. How about if I get one from 9 years ago, not 10 years ago? No, that still doesn't pass the muster. What about this one? What about that? Wear the freaking thing and sign the paper and let's go. Let's go. Line up. Let's go. Wear your helmet. Fine. I don't care if you get knocked into next week. That's your problem.
I'm with
not
Murray.
Mine.
I'm with Murray. I think there's an ulterior motive. And my guess is that he just didn't want to be at training camp. Like he just said, you know what, dude, get me there 2 weeks before. I'll be there for the third game and then we'll start to prep for week one and then I'm good. That's it. That's all I'm giving you.
Meanwhile, the circumcised feet, you know, I mean, I'm with you. Again, this guy's a clown.
Unbelievable.
There's no question about it.
Those pictures are unbelievable. Seriously. Freaking Captain America goes in the cryo chamber and rips apart his feet. Like, unbelievable.
Okay, there's my helmet rant. I'm sorry. We still have to follow up on Maz's Gordon thing. No commercials. 90 seconds. We're right back.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG. It's Felger and Maz, 95 The Sports Hub.
All right, 4:02 in the evening here, the triumphant return of Tony Maserati in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Your thoughts on Josh Gordon?
Okay, so just quickly, this is our Rodenheiser hot take, brought to you by Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric. Go to Rodenheiser.com to learn more about AC. So with Gordon, like the way Belichick and Brady were talking about him in the preseason, like Murray, I was stunned that he got reinstated. And then I sort of came to the conclusion that maybe it's as simple as them saying to him, this is it, pal. This is it.
Who's they?
The team saying, you know, like when he's in the program and he's going through, you know, rehabilitation, they can't release him. They can't do anything to him, I don't think. And so now he's going to come back and they want him to play for the team. But they tried everything last year. They had, you know, guys following him around, staying outside his hotel room, whatever. I mean, those were some of the rumors that were out there at the time with Gordon. They went through all this, all these measures to protect the guy from himself, as we were saying. And they still couldn't do it. So now he goes in through the rehab program. Now he comes out, and in the interim, they're like, look, this is it. This is it. Any slip up, we're done. You're gone. It's over. So don't even think anything but that. And I think that in his heart of hearts, Belichick knows this guy's not going to make it through the year. If I had to guess, they want him, though. They need the receiver. They put in some time with him last year. But at the same time, Bill being Bill, he's not going to put up with it again. I mean, there's no way they're going to put up with it again. If this guy falls off the wagon.
Well, can the league give him another chance? Could the league give him another chance? I mean, I think it'll be taken out of the Patriots' hands.
I mean, but hasn't he already been down that road with the league?
I think this is your
banned for life?
Ish. You know, this is your last chance, and this time we really mean it. I mean, that's sort of how I think it is.
Yeah, I get the sense that the Patriots were distancing themselves from him in the preseason. And I don't think it was just because, you know, they can then, you know, put it on the league or whatever. I think a lot of it is a message to Gordon. Like, this is it, pal. This is your last shot. Okay? You know, we were your last shot when we brought you here in the first place. You're lucky we're bringing you back. But he knows now there's no more gray area. I don't think that's a huge revelation. I think everyone sort of understands that going in. There's no way this guy can fall off the wagon again and survive.
So, again, just to reset the, you know, Demaryius Thomas back before anyone, you know, way before anyone thought he might, with the Achilles. He suffered the Achilles at the end of last year,
right?
It was
in December, yeah. I mean, the talk was he was probably going to be on it until week 7.
Well, the PUP you can go like to week 12 almost. So they take him off the PUP today. He obviously passes the physical, passes the conditioning run. He's out there practicing today. So that's a big return for the Patriots. And now in the blink of an eye, Edelman comes back, Gordon's on the field, and Demaryius Thomas is on the field. Looks sort of different. I'll tell you, though, I just sort of hate the makeup of those two outside guys. I just, ugh. But that's not to say it ain't going to work. You know, it's probably going to work because most things do that they try. And especially it's how they use Gordon. You know, I talked about this when you were gone. You know, they got into this thing last year where they're just chucking it to Gordon over the top and these low percentage things and trying to force him the ball. The last
Tennessee game
before the bye was in Tennessee, 4 catches on 12 targets. They scored 10 points, and then they went into the bye, and then they came out of the bye and really treated him totally differently. Started throwing to him on slants and underneath, and I think he caught 8 balls on his next 8 targets. He was 5 for 5 the next game, 3 for 3 the game after that. And his yardages were down, but he was more of a possession. He was just more sort of in the system, which is how I want them to use him. And, you know, he's so big and has such good hands, he can wall off receivers and play that kind of game. So great. But they get into this thing where they're trying to stretch the field and, you know, big plays to Josh Gordon. I didn't have any use for that. I don't think the offense needs that. I don't think it works. And I don't think it worked for them last year. If he's in the system and within the system and the way they play, fine. But damn, so damn unreliable off the field. And then Demaryius Thomas, this is a guy I like. This is a guy I used to enjoy you beating up. You go into a big game against the Broncos, and there's Demaryius Thomas with over 1,000 yards and high flying, and then you crack him in the mouth on the first series, and you don't see him the rest of the day. I used to love being on the other side of it. Now he's your guy. Blech.
That's what Seattle did to him in the Super Bowl.
Anyone who's got a half a clue, crack him in the mouth. Bye-bye, Demaryius. Bye-bye. But now he's your guy. So anyway, I just don't like the makeup of those receivers. I'll take this Jacoby Myers all day long. I mean, all day long. I like that kid. But anyway, back to your phones as promised. Here's Dominic in Southbridge on the Antonio Brown helmet thing. Go ahead, Dominic.
You know what it is about Antonio Brown and his helmet, and I know it's just Tim's right about the whole thing with the equipment. These guys are such muppets. They're allowed to do whatever they want with the equipment. It'd be a total clown show. But you know what it is. It's his hair. You know how that helmet leaves that perfect disc on top of his head? And that's like with his dancing and his whole brand. It's like Cam Newton with the towel over his ears. He doesn't want the new helmet to mess with his hair.
Do we think that might be true?
I hadn't thought about that. I'd buy that.
Oh, I wouldn't rule that out.
His image is so important to him. That is evident.
With this guy.
I mean, this is an easy comparison to make, but and maybe this is your point about receivers. They're like NBA superstars. A complete pain in the ass.
Oh, God.
Talk about high maintenance. Complete pain in the ass. So, again, the other positions don't feel like they're that way.
Not as bad as that.
Holy crap. I mean, it really becomes... I can't remember a case where a guy shot his way out of town, got a new contract, and then started creating problems with his new team before he even got on the field.
Before training camp started. Jim in Cambridge on the Patriots. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing? I'm kind of spitballing here, but I think Belichick has a plan for the season, or game plans for the season. And what he's thinking is there's 3 scenarios. Brady plays great. He's superstar, best in the world again, and he has a nice, adequate running back, running attack, and a good defense and special teams, and they got a great chance. Scenario 2 is that he doesn't play that well. He has kind of an off season, and they need that new running game and that new defense and that new special teams. And then scenario 3 is kind of the same as 2. He gets hurt, and they have to bring in a new quarterback where you just have to do the same thing, scenario 2.
Right.
Just want to hear your thoughts on that, and have a good day, guys.
Okay, Jim, I think you're right. I think he's sort of assuming 2 and 3 are going to happen. I think he's building the team like 2 or 3 is going to happen. And this is a little dramatic. It's a little bit of an overstatement from me, but I feel like it's in this direction. I think he's treating Brady like John Elway was treated at the end of his career, and Peyton Manning was treated at the end of his. And I think Brady's better than those guys, and they were at this stage. I think Brady has a lot more to give than those guys did at that stage. I think the Pats can win this way because they kind of won that way last year, or started to anyway. So it's not that I think it will be unsuccessful. I just think it's an overcompensation for what I think Bill thinks of Brady. I think Bill's underestimating what Brady has left right now.
Yeah, maybe. But again, I look at it as Bill looks at it and says, no, the chances of him playing at the same level now are less than they were. The chances of it are less. So what am I going to do? I'm going to have a 42-year-old quarterback, and I'm going to buy in the TB12 bullcrap? What do you want to sell me the nuts too, Tom? I got to buy the nuts? Like, is Bill going to do that? He's going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, Tom, 42, no problem. Let's give you a 4-year contract, and why don't you send me 24 bags of nuts? I'll take those, and oh, and throw in a coffee table book and some seeds, chia seeds, or whatever the hell you want to throw in there. Send me that too, Tom, no problem. Or is he going to look at it and go, this guy's full of crap. What am I going to do, invest in a 42-year-old, or I got to prepare myself for the reality that he's going to fade?
But could it also be none of that, and it's just sort of the competitiveness between those two? Where Brady's got this thing, I'm going to show Bill. He doesn't believe in me, and I'm going to show him. And Bill is saying, it's time for me to win my way. And it has nothing to do with how it looks on the field or how it's going to look, but it's just sort of a little bit of an extension of their personality clash or whatever that thing is that's been going on down there the last couple years.
Yeah, power struggle, if you want to call it that.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think there's something to this. I do. That Bill says, you know, again, I'm giving you the dramatic version.
Yes,
okay?
Well, this is Felger Mass.
So work with me. It's the dramatic version. Are you going to make me trade my quarterback? I got to trade Jimmy G? So now I have to build it around you? Well, I'll tell you what. Fine, I had to trade Jimmy G, but I don't have to build it around you. I can build it however I want. So if you're my quarterback now, I'm going to build it like I would build it with a 42-year-old quarterback. I don't care what kind of seeds you're eating or anything else. Whatever you're putting in that stupid-ass Vitamix blender of yours, no offense to Vitamix, I have one. I love the product. But you get the idea. Whatever you're putting in that stupid-ass blender of yours, go sell that crap and your bag of nuts to someone else.
You watched Garoppolo last night, Miz?
Yeah, he had a tough night.
Yeah. You catch any of that?
Say the seeds are doing a pretty good job for the old man.
Don't you be writing off Jimmy G just yet, Murray.
Michael and Walpole. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
So first off, I'd like to acknowledge I'm not a Patriots fan, so I do have a bit of a bias here against them. But if you look at not just Jimmy G, but what Matt Castle did without Tom Brady, Matt Castle went 11-5, and then Jimmy G and Brissett combined went 3-1.
14-6 is your number, Mike. 14-6.
Excuse me?
14-6 without Tom Brady. 14-6 since Brady took over. The backups are 14-6 as starters without Tom Brady. Now go.
Yes, exactly. So, in what scenario do you think, if Bill Belichick decides to bring Jimmy G back, that he won't succeed? Because if you look at another team like the Indianapolis Colts with Curtis Painter and Peyton Manning, they go 2-14 without Peyton Manning. Is that a legit?
Yeah. You should see my Packers with Michael Hundley or whatever bag of crap they have back there when Rodgers gets hurt. It's a complete clown show. The Patriots go 14-6. Again, it's one of my favorite numbers. One of the things that I think just stands out as much as any team can win with a great quarterback. They all do. All the great quarterbacks win at a high level. So what does that mean when you win, you know, Brady's records? Your record without Brady? Now that impresses me. 14-6? That says something about you.
Which is why it still means something to Bill to do it.
And it should. I'd be proud of that number. I would be if I were Bill. They should be proud of that number. And if Garoppolo came back, what would their record be, Murray? What would their record be then?
5-11. Something like that.
Oh, Murray, you're delusional.
He sucks. He blows. Get it through your thick skull.
You're putting that in my terms so that I can understand it?
Yes, I am. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Don't count out Jimmy G. I'm telling you, it's a very good chance, Murray, that at this time next year, you're getting ready to go into week one with Jimmy G as your quarterback.
If you've tuned in to us anytime in the last 3 weeks, Maz hasn't been here because he's been on some sort of long excursion, like African safari, but he's back in case you haven't noticed. Yeah, give it to me again, Jimmy. Give me the jingle to break, please.
Maz is back from his 1 week vacation.
Hey, la, Maz is
and
back.
And gotta get his takes on all the stuff he missed.
To Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
This may feel strong, but you people are stupid.
OMG, it's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, 4:02 in the evening here, the triumphant return of Tony Maserati in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Your thoughts on Josh Gordon?
Okay, so just quickly, this is our Rodenheiser hot take, brought to you by Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC, and Electric. Go to Rodenheiser.com to learn more about AC. So with Gordon, like the way Belichick and Brady were talking about him in the preseason, like Murray, I was stunned that he got reinstated. And then I sort of came to the conclusion that maybe it's as simple as them saying to him, this is it, pal. This is it.
Who's they?
The team saying, you know, like when he's in the program and he's going through, you know, rehabilitation, they can't release him. They can't do anything to him, I don't think. And so now he's going to come back, and they want him to play for the team, but they tried everything last year. They had, you know, guys following him around, staying outside his hotel room, whatever. I mean, those were some of the rumors that were out there at the time with Gordon. They went through all this, all these measures to protect the guy from himself, as we were saying, and they still couldn't do it. So now he goes in through the rehab program. Now he comes out, and in the interim, they're like, look, this is.